Blog Talk Radio.
Seven feet barren, strange fruit, blood on the leaves, and blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South. Them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Scent of magnolia, clean and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck. The rain together, for the wind to suck, for the song to rot, for the
welcome to African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club with your host, Charles Williams, and I'm joined by my lovely wife on the Wheel of Steel, Jalavet. Say hello, Jalavet.
Hello, Jalavet.
All right. Tonight is our second part of a book review. We're covering Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave, written by himself. We're featuring the second chapter, and it's going to be... It's quite interesting. We're going to open with actually the last part of the second chapter because it's most interesting. So, how's everything today?
Everything is outstanding. I'm eager to get into the meat of this. On the broadcast the week before last, we were actually off 1 week, and so the broadcast the week before last, we had an opportunity to kind of just introduce the idea of the slave narratives and the relevance for today. And I think that one of the things that will be very pivotal in much of our reading these particular works will be that we will find that much of the ideologies and the thinking of our ancestors, the people today, have wavered very little. And I think that that's going to be very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, I know I was, you know, I spoke to you before we went on air, and I was actually looking at chapter 3. But I did find, you know, I've read this book like twice. And I think I got a little confused, but this chapter did have some, every chapter has some very interesting details that deserve our attention as we reflect upon and project our experience in this current era on the lives of our ancestors, and, you know, look at the way they lived and, you know, how that projects into the future, the present and the future. Like for one thing in particular, I'm going to touch on is the plant. The plantation is in essence a corporation. Mr. Frederick Douglass does not let us forget the structure is no different from the way corporations and, you know, European white-owned businesses function today. Hence the reason why black people say, "I'm going to work on the plantation."
Right.
Because
that's kind of what I was talking about when I was talking about the way things have, so many things have remained the same. It's things like that, how we can see the parallelisms of life on the plantation and how it very much resonates with the life that we live today. Also, for people listening in the chat room or live on the browser, if you're interested in getting in on the topic and speaking with the moderator, the phone number to call is 323-580-5707. And you could also connect with us on Facebook, and so that you can, from there, keep up with the upcoming broadcast and other books and works from our other pages and shows. And you can find us at facebook.com/beyondthebook.
There you go. Thank you. Now, one thing, I'll read a few lines here from chapter 2. He says, Colonel Lloyd kept from 300 to 400 slaves on his home plantation, owned a large number more on the neighboring farms belonging to him. The names of the farm nearest to his home were, you know, he names a few of these places. And he says, skip down, he said it was that wherever the city was, where the plantation was, it was the seat of the government for the whole of 20 farms. Now, interesting, more that he says it's just a large number more. So almost every plantation in the area was belonging to Colonel Lloyd, which is Frederick Douglass' father. This white man's his father, like, just like Bob Marley's father was a white man, and, you know, he probably was the son of some colonial planter there. And it's, he goes on to say, all disputes among overseers were settled here, and if a slave was convicted of any high misdemeanor, he became unmanageable or evinced a determination to run away. He was brought immediately to that location, severely whipped out, whipped, put on board the sloop. We don't know what that is, some kind of torture device, obviously. Carried to Baltimore, Maryland, and sold to Austin Woolfolk, who, I guess, he's a slave trader guy, a human trafficker, flesh man, and or some other slave trader as a warning to the other remaining slaves. But and here, let me just add this right. He said, here too, this is like the wage. We wage slaves today, wage, I would say wage peasants or wage captives. And I do have this disdain for the term slave, because we know that this is the word slave or slav belongs, is an ethnic group in Eastern Europe. And they applied that term to us, and we're not Eastern European descent. And knowing how language affects thought, action, and a consciousness, we know that the most accurate term would be captive. And to keep us from seeing ourselves as captives, you know, as prisoners, because that's what we really are. These farms are actually prison farms. You know, and we're still on these prison farms now. We're still in this slave quarter. I can in some cities, at least where we are in where we live in Louisiana, there's a neighborhood in a neighboring city called Jackson Quarter. You know, and this it still carries that name, and I'm glad they keep that name because it's a constant reminder of the past.
Right.
It needs not be forgotten.
Right.
He says, here too, the slaves of all the other farms receive their monthly allowance of food and yearly clothing. The men and women slaves receive as their monthly allowance of food 8 pounds of pork, or its equivalent in fish, and 1 bushel of cornmeal. This is for 1 month. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not speaking of how many people in your family, your household.
Mm-hmm.
This says each person, right, whatever. But anyway, he says the men and women slaves receive their monthly allowance, right? Their yearly clothing consisted of 2 coarse linen shirts, 1 pair of linen trousers, like the shirts, 1 jacket, 1 pair of trousers for winter, made of coarse Negro cloth. We don't know what that means. I can only imagine it's like, must be like sackcloth.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very coarse, uncomfortable garment.
Right. Any garment that a material that has to be called coarse, right in the name, you know, is very telling.
And the term Negro, well, we know that Negro really means black.
Right.
So if it's black, then it's got to be hot, you know, in the South and very uncomfortable. I don't know, or was it called Negro because it was something that only Negroes were wear to as a uniform?
Right.
So I don't know. I'll have to speak to someone who's knowledgeable about this.
Mm-hmm.
1 pair of stockings. And 1 pair of shoes, the whole of which could not have cost more than $7.
Mm-hmm.
The allowance of the slaves' children was given to the mothers or the old women having care of them. The children, unable to work in the fields, had neither shoes, stockings, jackets, nor trousers given to them. Their clothes consisted of 2 linen coarse shirts per year. When these failed them, they went naked until the next allowance day, whenever that was. Children from 7 to 10 years old of both sexes, almost naked, might be seen in all seasons of the year. I can tell you, later on in this book, he discusses, you know, wintertime, going barefoot, near, you know, freezing his feet off. Harriet Jacobs reported the same thing. He had received a good pair of quality shoes from her grandmother, who was... I think her grandmother was almost free. I think she wasn't free at the time. But she received a good pair of shoes, and her mistress forbade her from wearing them again.
Oh, yeah, she claimed that they made too much noise.
Right.
Right.
Right. They hated to see her in these nice shoes. Now, today we have transformed that into we dress up and we wear expensive clothes as an affront to the European,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the European and all of his craftiness has turned that against us. What he has done now made us overvalue wearing high-quality materials, clothing, shoes, and whatnot, and made us, in turn, become bondage to the clothes.
Mm-hmm.
By buying that and not investing in our own future and making our own clothes and producing our own clothes for us, by us, and keeping them out of the economic cycle. But, you know, just getting back to the earlier part of that, is that this is a slave wage,
mm-hmm.
basically. You know, and that's really what minimum wage is. It's a slave wage. They don't have... They're not being really compensated a livable wage, just like what the allowance being given here. They call it allowance like as though, you know, like they're their parents and just giving something to the children, like they're not really doing anything. Yeah, I'm just giving this just to keep you, you know, sustained. And that's exactly what it is, barely sustaining the life of the prisoner,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the sooner we begin to realize that we work for what we call managers and supervisors. They're overseers and underseers. You know, the whole system of peonage or captain, whichever name you decide to classify it, is still intact. It has not been disintegrated. It's only been adapted to suit, I would say, more modern conventions, ways of articulating our condition so it doesn't seem as dreadful as it is. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on to mention in the following paragraph how there were no beds. Nobody slept on the bed. Everybody had one blanket. You know? And it's a totally horrible situation to imagine. However, people are still living in situations not much different from that today.
Right. Actually, exactly like that. Sister Antoinette Harrell, she has dedicated her life to revealing to many that the peonage system is still alive and well in many parts of the rural South.
Right, right. We visit her program. It's called Nurturing Our Roots here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She's a Louisiana-based genealogist. And for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with Antoinette Harrell's research,
I'll share her information on the community page.
Thank you. And this is still continuing. We have far from progress to a status of free, respectable people, which is the reason why we're still treated without respect in the world, because we have not yet commanded it. And we think, we see that, you know, we got a black president, and just because this guy's, you know, prancing around in expensive clothes, and look at his people. Look at the people who carry some of his blood anyway. Look at the condition that we're in. Because
mm-hmm.
we are undereducated. We don't have a healthy consciousness. So that's why we function like we do. Now, he goes on in this chapter to mention the name of a particular overseer whom he has a moniker of Mr. Severe. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This is a nightmare on parchment.
That's his nickname. You have callers waiting too whenever you're ready.
Okay. He says, Mr. Severe, the overseer, used to stand by the door of the quarter armed with a large hickory stick and a heavy cowskin, ready to whip anyone who was so unfortunate as to not hear or from any other cause was prevented from being ready to start for the field at the sound of the horn. Now, we were discussing on the debauch, on another program, about the sounding of the horn and how it affects the mind and to put you in a state of readiness or something.
Mm-hmm.
That, and so on the plantation, everyone was alerted by the sound of this alarm, a bugle, a horn, just like in the military. And if you don't make it, then people are automatically whipped with a heavy stick, a hickory stick, cowskin, or any other kind of object. Basically, it's just being brutalized, you know.
Right.
Just as a for humiliation. Oh, and it said Mr. V was rightly named. He was a cruel man. And he's, you know. But anyway, go ahead. You can let in a caller or two. Go ahead.
Okay. 646. You're live with After Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. Welcome.
Hello, this is Kenny G.
Hey, Kenny G, welcome.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, Kenny G? What it is? What you got?
Nothing much. You're basically answering like what I wanted to know, and you're working up to it. You're working towards it, which is the overseer being murdered by Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass murdered him.
Which, I mean, I know he did beat the hell out of one of them. I think that's in chapter 4 or 5, but I didn't remember him killing one.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. They gave in this book, it seems like they gave them a Thomas Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn type of flavor to it and moderated.
Well, you know what? I forgot. This is the abridged edition.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I haven't read the other one. The other one is the one he published after 1865.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know about that.
By 300-400 pages, and I do need to read that one. Yeah,
I believe that somewhere along the line, he murdered an overseer for bad treatment. And
I'm reading another book which I plan to feature on this program. My brother, he sent us a review copy, and he has a lot of accounts of the judgment. I like to call it the judgment of the overseer, the condemned overseer. You know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of overseers were killed, you know.
Right.
Because back then, we still had balls. And
right.
We didn't take that stuff, man. We would put them, we would catch them guys and set them on fire or, you know, and do them in. And one peculiar thing I didn't like in the reports that I read, I'm not saying this happened, how much it happened, but the reports I did read, and it disturbed me, was that the brothers had who killed the overseer turned themselves in.
Sure did.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. Mm. I mean, I was like, wow. I mean, they had us feeling guilty about having killed.
And I'm not so sure that the person themselves felt guilty as much as it may have been peer pressure. Can't you see that today?
Yeah. How many times have you heard a story of a brother, you know, going after these oppressors high in the streets, you know, and then
the mama
tell them you need to turn yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I mean, there was an incident like that, like one incident that a boy was starting to rob a cashier with a fake gun. Remember that story? And the mom came in and turned them right in.
Ooh, no, I didn't hit.
Stop.
You see. You know,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So I mean, there was just one incident that happened like that. They had it on the news, and they showed the surveillance camera of the young boy, 17-year-old. You know, he was a brother, young brother, desperate, and he started to flash his new fake pistol at the cashier, and the mother ran right in the store and stopped him. But I think she took him to the precinct or something like that. He got caught anyway. And they just held him, and they just put him in the holding cell for a couple of days, and that was it. But back to your point, though, I mean, yeah, you're right. You know how many, you know, the peer pressure.
But when you're comparing, you know, wanton acts of violence with vindication, making right, setting straight, these types of negative activity or treatment towards himself or, you know, one's fellow man, those comparisons, you know, are slightly askew. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It is a little different. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
But they also, like Nat Turner, they also say that Nat Turner was biracial, like his father did, or one of the overseers or his the plantation master. His father was white, Nat Turner.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know
okay.
if you guys heard of that. Yeah, they said that. I have the video. And that, you know, he turned on, you know, how Nat Turner did started out. He turned on his plantation. You know,
right.
His overseer.
Right.
Yeah,
but they supported him. You know what I'm saying? He had a following, evidently.
Oh, yeah. And you can't convince, I don't think you can convince Spire Bros to do nothing even on a clandestine level.
Right.
They be eyes to be getting all big scared. They be on the phone.
Right. But as far as like Frederick Douglass is concerned, I'm really interested in your follow up on his story, because I just want to know, where did he get his education? From what I've learned, from what I've heard, that he was spontaneous, like he had spontaneous, like Malcolm X, he was self-taught. And I just wanted to know, you know, I just wanted to hear about his transition on how did he get to the White House, you know, to chop it up with Abraham Lincoln, and what in the proclamation of what, Declaration of Independence or something like that, affirmative action, what was it, proclamation that he wrote?
Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation?
Right. Emancipation Proclamation, right. I just wanted to know, you know, what was that about?
Matter of fact, when we get to that part, I might have to bring the other book into play, the expanded edition, because you just brought something to my attention. I probably should get that one and fill in details. People can follow along the Bridge edition and then just add in on that. That's a good idea. And then, because the Emancipation Proclamation is a different kind of document. And, you know, the guy we had on, brother had on, Ezra Aharon, his book we featured, Sovereign Evolution, From Civil Rights to Sovereign Rights, The Manifest Destiny, from Stone series. He has a whole chapter, no, at least a whole section, dealing with the Emancipation Proclamation. And he analyzed it, and it's a very amazing piece of chicanery that the European put together to, you know, deceive us into maintaining our position of a citizen without sovereign rights under the oppressive government, basically making us chattel property of the feds and not chattel property of the individual white man.
All right, you mean you still remaining 3/5 of a human being?
Yeah, you still 3/5 according to them, but you're not counted as such because they don't need the representation. See, you understand that 3/5 of a human being was so they can get more power in the House of Representatives. They can count every 5 Negroes equal 3 free persons, and so they could use it to gain dominant representation in the House of Representatives. In Congress. So without that, they basically made us corporate slaves. That's why we talk about the corporation being a plantation.
That's right.
That's why we say we're going to the plantation. If anybody still has a corporate job, you work for IBM, you work for Bell, County Humane, any of these corporations, that's the plantation.
Well, like you said, you're doing minimum wage. No, minimum wage.
Minimum wage, or even if you're getting a high wage. Because, you know, the thing, you know, because in this other book I'm checking out, Slaves of Swag, you know, some captives were compensated. They were treated, even in the Roman Empire, they were given higher allowances. See what I'm saying? The allowance was basically based upon the wealth of your master and how he wanted to compensate you. That's why we talk about the house slave being compensated greater than the field slave or slave.
Well, this is what I'm a little bit confused about, because from what I've gone, he escaped to that killed his overseer, put himself in a box, in a large box, to go to the north. And when he got to the north, what I don't understand is, like, how does North have it? I mean, like, you must have had slaves too. From, you know, I always was perplexed about that. What did they have? If they didn't have slavery up in the North, what was you, an indentured?
Well, slavery was in the North. I don't know which year slavery was abolished in certain Northern states.
Right.
It was, you know, remember they found a massive graveyard of Africans in New York. So it was a mass grave. Maybe was it 10 years ago, Jonathan?
Yeah, it wasn't long ago.
Yeah. So, yeah.
There, Kenny, you should know, right?
Yeah, they went to the South Street, Seaport, I think, around Wall Street, and they dug up a ship, stuff like that, and they had all of those relevant artifacts. Black people, like the history of black people being slaves, like a grave, like that.
Yeah. So it was throughout all of these colonies, and I still refer to the United States as colonies, because there's not the rightful indigenous land. They got it by hooking and crooking. They didn't buy it. It was not a purchase.
Right. Okay. His call dropped. It was breaking up anyway, so it's his call dropped, so we can go ahead.
Okay. You have any more?
No. The calls are dropping. I don't know. Sometimes we have problems with Blog Talk, and it looks like this is going to be one of those nights. So if your call is cut off, just give us a call back in at 323-580-5707.
All right.
All right. You can go ahead.
All right. Now, on this plantation, Colonel Lord, which is his father's plantation, you know, he mentions, you know, more about how the, you know, how what they had going on in terms of, like they had a shoemaking factory, they had blacksmithing, cartwrighting, coopering. I don't even know what a coopering is. They had, you know, the grain mill, you know, everything. This place was a very well organized place that had everything that a society needed to produce. He said the whole place was a business-like aspect, very unlike the neighboring farms. The number of houses, too, conspired to give the advantage over the neighboring farms. It was called by the slaves the Great House Farm. He said few privileges were esteemed higher by the slaves on the out farms than the being selected to do errands at the Great House Farm. So this was like the big house. He was at the biggest big house.
Mm-hmm.
Plantation, meaning, you know, it was a central location from which all the other places were, you know, like you say, it was the seat of the government, everything, and it was the spot, and you know, and so he got his education here at his first, the one in which he was born. He got to understand how the plantation was set up, how it was operated, and he could recognize all of the machinations of the European from, you know, just by observing what these people have done, by looking at that, you know, well-operated, I would say, prison farm. But what we'll do is we'll take a break for a few moments, and we'll come back. Hopefully some of y'all be able to dial back in to listen to the program. We wouldn't have gone too far in our discussion.
Brother Kenny's back in.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, tell Ken. We're gonna go ahead and take a break. And we'll be right back to continue our discussion in Chapter 2 of Frederick Douglass' Narrative of Life of a Slave. To African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things that he can afford to let alone. With that in mind, we find our people locked in a permanent cycle of poverty, especially those who mistakenly believe that they somehow have arrived, only a paycheck from foreclosure. Although we find black incomes at an all-time high, we still lack wealth, and we also lack the understanding of the purpose of wealth, which is safety, growth, and security. But it's not hard to turn this around. it will first require us to take a look at the bigger picture, and also it will require us to stop flossing. We have to understand that that $10 that we waste every day equals $300 a month. The same $300 that you find yourself missing every month. The same $300 required for you to invest into your family, into your community, and into your nation. Please join us on Facebook, African Money.
Greetings, I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations, every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Join us for the sweetest show on internet radio, Honey Soul Radio, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Join your hostess, the Honey Diva, and Miss Lady T, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Honey Soul Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Now add a little honey to your flavor.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.
The Woman's Song Community Experience is an extension of the Woman's Song Facebook community. Woman's Song was created with the mission to promote sisterhood and solidarity amongst women of color the world over. The Community Experience radio broadcast is an outreach effort to bring lecturers, authors, healers, spiritualists, and others with the necessary information to assist us in our campaign to repair ourselves. Our community is in dire need of reformation. During this Renaissance period of awareness, we will honor the womb man, and we seek to bridge the gap of understanding, love, and the upliftment of our sisters in crisis. Will you join us? We need your help in bringing this new awakening to all who desire its enlightenment. Become a part of our commitment to elevation as we work together to lift the divine earth to their rightful places. Woman Song. She's singing.
Welcome back. Afrikaans Beyond the Book Club. Narrative of Life, Douglas, an American Slave, written by himself. And we're still in the second chapter. Is the line holding up?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So now I'm going to go ahead and continue where I left off.
Okay, let me give the number. If you're interested in being a part of this discussion, the phone number is 323-580-5707. You can call in. We do encourage others to become more involved in this moderated discussion about this particular book.
Right. Whether on in the chat room or on the phone line, it's all good.
Right. And the caller that where the call had dropped, the caller's back.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now, I mentioned in this chapter how Frederick was talking about how Colonel Lloyd's plantation had all these various operations on the particular farm, and how it was such a high honor to everyone to be allowed to, whether it be the overseers to be represented and come to this particular plantation. And he likened being sent to this place by the overseers and the captives to be an honor equivalent to being sent to American Congress. I mean, that's how big it was for them. He says right here, he said, they regarded it as evidence of great confidence reposed in them by their overseers. And it was on this account, as well as a constant desire to be out of the field from under the driver's lash, that they esteemed it a high privilege, one worth careful living for. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back in this same chapter and look at what's really going on this plantation. Now, they're looking at the facade, the great stately homes, and the various operations that look like a very well organized. I mean, yes, it is well organized. But here in this same chapter, he exposes the brutality underneath that veneer of strength and dignity and honor. And he's going to show you, this is what Mr. Sevier, this insane, maniac, maniacal overseer, is doing on this plantation. He said this Mr. Sevier was a cruel man. He said he's seen him whip a woman, causing the blood to run half an hour at a time. And he said in the midst of the children, like the woman's children's crying and pleading for her for mercy, he said he seemed to take pleasure in manifesting his fiendish barbarity. Added to his cruelty, he was a profane swearer, and it was enough to chill the blood and stiffen the hair of an ordinary man to hear him talk. Scarce a sentence escaped him, but that was commenced or concluded by some horrid oath. Basically, they make you promise that you're going to do some horrible thing. Basically, make a deal with the devil,
mm-hmm.
to get some kind of leniency that, you know, you probably wish you had not even asked for by the time it was over with. The field was a place to witness his cruelty and profanity. His presence made it both the field of blood and of blasphemy. From the rising till the going down of the sun, he was cursing, raving, cutting, and slashing among the slaves of the field in the most frightful manner. His career was short. He died very soon after I went to Colonel Lloyd's, and he died as he lived, uttering his dying groans, bitter curses, and horrid oaths. His death was regarded by the slaves as a result of a merciful providence. And then he was subsequently replaced by another person considerably less cruel than he, than Mr. Sevier. And so this is the contrast on what they project, with all of the, you know, the dignity that makes people proud to go there, and what he's explaining, what I just read, is what really goes on. That when Europeans, when they show us films and show us all these scenes, like, you know, on PBS, and, oh, look at Louisiana, look how great, and look at all these great, wonderful mansions, and you see how they're like, oh, that's pretty nice, good stone columns, oh yes, and that's going on. But this is what really is going on: rape, murder, torture, just every kind of, you know, disturbing, God-hating offense, unimaginable, is happening. And until we learn to despise this place and cry out for its condemnation, you know, we will find no quarter in the world. And later on into at the end of the chapter, he discusses the profound effects of the Negro spirituals and the effect that they had on him. He said, you know, he went into, you know, how so penetrating the songs were and how he seldom could listen to them without crying himself.
Mm-hmm.
He say he literally says, he said, they were tones loud, long, and deep. They breathed the prayer and complaint of souls boiling over with the bitterest anguish. Every tone was a testimony against slavery and a prayer to God for deliverance from chains. Now, do we sing our spirituals with that kind of power today in our great churches and our great meetings? No. I would say no. What would you say?
I would have to agree.
No, we say everything is great. We say we are blessed and highly favored. Everything is going well. While we got millions of our people in literal bondage on penitentiary farms and in state penitentiary farms that we call penitentiaries and county jails, and in housing projects where they're being systematically impoverished and just having their wits stolen from them and their sanity, all of us are deprived in by some great measure that we cannot comprehend, yet we don't even have a sense enough to cry out for its conclusion. That's how far the black man has fallen since 1845. He don't even ask for it to end.
Well, I think instead we've been taught that somehow we are due our portion of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we think, yeah, we'll do it. Matter of fact, we into it now. I believe we've been turned out.
All right.
I think that's another way to say it.
And I think what happens is once you become so vested into any type of movement, you know, and we're talking about not only blood, sweat, and tears, but we're talking about years and years of indoctrination, and that type of investment. By, you know, yourself and your ancestors, I think it's kind of like that thing where you've lost, you know, even you see it in gambling and in various other Ponzi schemes. Once you've invested so much, then at no point do you feel it, you know, it would behoove you to just walk away. You want some type of return on the investment.
Yes. Yeah.
And at some point, that's when you then become the mark.
Yep. You own the hook and you ain't going to get off the hook.
Right. You are on the hook fully.
Yeah, yeah. That's what the con is saying. You got you on the hook. You're not ready to give up because you got your mind set on this. And that's one thing why we politically don't want our sovereignty anymore, because we pawned it off in exchange for our compliance with our overseers. We collectively, in some kind of unconscious way, I don't think nobody actually, I'm not gonna say nobody.
Well, of course I believe it was unconscious, because consciously, why would you believe that you could go to the perpetrators of the most heinous, you know, crime, you know, in the lives of the people that they are victimizing and say, I want you to regulate what you are doing, and I'm going to admonish you to please stop that. I'm going to tell you on you, ask you to understand that what you've done is bad, and hopefully get you to see that this was really wrong and you kind of went too far with this, and can you please stop it? And then for them to tell you, well, just hang on 1 minute, you know, because some of the crumbs that will fall from my table will be far better than that you know right now. and then you then say, okay, sounds good, works, seems legit, let's go with it.
Right, because right, mm-hmm. We don't write. We on the hook. It's gonna get better. Just hang in there.
Right.
Yeah, you're gonna get that big payoff. You just gotta, what they say, justice delayed is justice denied.
Right. And so we're not really thinking this through. We're not thinking this through anymore. We're just going through the motions.
As you remember in Roots 2, 1979, when Tom Harvey, Chicken George's son, was swindled by these black bourgeoisie Democratic, they were Democratic officials, and they wanted Tom Harvey to persuade the people in his county, because he was an influential man,
mm-hmm.
to vote a certain, I think it was Democrat.
Right, they were all Republican, and that's when the big change came, and when all of the black community became Democrats.
Right, and that's society. Now, we're not really promoting American politics for the black folks, but the point of that illustration was to demonstrate that there were black men working as operatives
mm-hmm.
for a party machine to persuade us to vote in any direction that was going to benefit some kind of particular political movement that Europeans were developing at the time,
mm-hmm.
which was, it was during Reconstruction. That community, you know, the Republicans were in office, in charge of the federal government, well, in charge of at least the executive branch at the time, and they wanted to, and since all, you know, black people were voting, they hadn't really, you know, worked out that whole cheating ballots yet. They hadn't perfected that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they needed to get the people to vote in compliance with the status quo in the South.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And so they got some black men to come down there and convince them that this is going to be best for the black community. And Tom Harvey regretted that. He realized that he had been taken in, he had been swindled, and he had weakened the power of his community. Only that it was too late. I don't know why he wasn't able to reverse that. But anyway, because I don't remember. But anyway, as we go on here, as we conclude, he mentions about this these prayers, spirituals. He says, hearing these notes always depressed my spirit and filled me with ineffable sadness. I have frequently found myself in tears while hearing them. The mere recurrence to those songs even now afflicts me. And while I am writing these lines, an expression of feeling has already found its way down my cheek. To those songs I trace my first glimmering conception of the dehumanizing character of slavery. I can never get rid of that conception. Those songs still follow me to deepen my hatred of slavery and quicken my sympathies for my brethren in bonds. If anyone wishes to be impressed with the soul-killing effects of slavery, let him go to Colonel Lloyd's plantation and on allowance day place himself in the deep pine woods and let him in silence analyze the sounds that pass through the chambers of his soul. And if he is not thus impressed, it will only be because there is no flesh in his obdurate heart. You know what I'm saying? And how often have we played videos or spirituals of some sort in front of a person, or maybe not in person, but post a video on a particular group or feed, whatever, your descendants of these people who still carry out these obscenities against God and man, and they make excuses.
Mm-hmm.
For the situation, and they're trying to exonerate their ancestors and themselves for their crimes, basically, and in turn try to blame us for being only fit and worthy to endure such treatment.
Blacks or whites?
Is it blacks or whites?
Yeah, I'm asking you which one, because
both. I would say both, but
supposed to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I was trying to put the girls on the bus, but you know what? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And us do the same thing like I posted that Chris Rock graphic about how who's the most racist black folks white people because black folks hate black folks too.
Uh-huh.
And that's because we worse because we were hating our own selves.
Right.
That's the greater offense.
The hatred of the self, right.
Right, and a lot of some people, you know, didn't quite catch that, you know, but that was the statement being made.
Well, of course, the conversation has to veer off on, you know, many other, you know, directions so that we won't really get the point because we don't want to.
Right.
Like Wilson says, we want to talk about the issue and never you know, get to the problem and solve it, because the truth is, and you say this often, and I absolutely believe it, and I stand behind 100%, is that we all know what needs to be done.
Right.
We all do.
Everybody knows.
And so what we're busy doing is we're busy rehashing and trying to figure out alternatives. But we all know what must be done.
Right. I liken this to what we do, we indulge our madness.
Right. Right.
That's the overindulgence in the recreation activities.
Mm-hmm.
And we even turn serious matters into recreation.
Right.
We turn our spirituality into recreation. For instance, church attendance is for the, you know, for a purpose of refining the basic the mind to a higher level of consciousness, and instead it has become a place to go and hear concerts. You know, you go to hear dynamic, hopefully if the speaker's any good, to hear great displays of oration. You know,
mm-hmm.
And instead of learning how to develop the, I would say, spiritual capacity of to use these ancient aphorisms to solve problems, that's the objective, to solve them in an appropriate manner to actually apply that spirituality to your life. And instead we don't know how to do that. We have had that substituted for other things, for contemporary philosophies given to us by our captors to maintain our current status of mind and social strata. And so we're given a few more crumbs to feel good about the decisions that we've made. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We'll feel like it was worth it, because we'll think, oh, it could be so much worse. Well, at this point in the game, it's pretty much, I'm saying that, you know, it's pretty much, you know, it's such more radical, it requires so much more sophistication to alter the circumstances, because our people really have lost that kind of savvy. And we're going to cover that in later chapters, the kind of savvy required to undo. And then when we look at other books, we're going to look at some of the ingenuity of our ancestors and how they overcame. Man, they overcame some very desperate circumstances,
mm-hmm.
to escape the clutches of these people that have us in a death grip now, that now we practically cannot think our way out of their clutches almost anymore. We're almost dumb enough as a group to be helpless as a lamb in the mouth of a wolf. And on that note, I think we'll conclude this podcast.
All right.
All right.
You do have callers waiting. Would you like to take those?
Yeah, sure, I'll take them.
Okay, all right. You keep getting dropped, 646, and then we have Brother Amin online as well.
All right.
646, you're up.
Yeah, this is Kenny G again. I got disconnected from you guys in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but Brother Amin is waiting on the line. You know, give him a chance to get on there. I spoke my piece.
Okay, all right, Brother Amin.
Yeah, we just wrapping it up.
How's it going?
Hey, it's pretty good. What's up, bro?
What's going on?
All right. I've been saying that all week, what you just said. Looks like we made it. Yeah, we so deep in it now.
Right.
These folks can't think their way out of a paper bag. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
Is that what you're going to usher in the bitter hour with?
Yes.
You're going to just walk in, kick in the door.
No, I'm out of bitterness.
And usher in the bitter hour. Right, you know what? We haven't had a bitter hour. For those listening, the bitter hour is the last few minutes of the broadcast when generally the gentlemen are able to just come in and just vent about their great wealth of love and shower the community with their words of
encouragement.
You're just going to kick in the door with the bitter hour. Okay, brother. All right. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody in the chat room, those listening live on the browser, and, of course, our callers. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We'll be back next Wednesday night, same time. And you're going to be is this particular book broken up by chapters?
Yes, we're doing chapter 3. We've been doing chapter by chapter.
Okay, you're going to do a chapter by chapter. Okay. So next week, chapter 3. You can probably find this book in your local library. I know it's on Amazon, but this is the particular edit by Gates.
No, yeah, this book edited by Gates. But if you can't find that one, yeah, we're going to, because all the narratives that we're going to feature are going to come from this volumes, slave narratives.
That's what edited by Gates, Henry Gates?
Yeah, Henry Gates.
Henry Louis Gates, Skip Gates. He edited this edition. This is what's called Slave Narratives, published by Library of America, and it contains about 10 narratives, and we'll cover, I don't know if we're going to do all of them, but we're going to do them.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how many we're going to do, but we may do all of them.
Get your books. Support black authors and whatnot, and get your books. And because there are several of these that we're going to cover. So, and if not, if you can't afford to get it, check the library. I'm certain that this book would be in the library.
If not, and try to convince your library to buy it.
Right.
Befriend the librarian and tell them to put a pre-owned purchase order in for it. Tell them to buy all the books you want.
Or else.
That's right. Or else. Vote or die. Because you're going to motherfucking kill you.
All right. So until next week.
I knew I was going to get you with that one.
It has.
All right. Okay, family.
It's been real, y'all. Good night.
Peace. Good night.
Peace.
Peace.
Peace.